So today, it's Heidegger and McLuhan. Maybe just for you to get back into the matter, what we're doing here in these lectures. So first I gave an introduction, said more about the history, or also Michael has done that. Then last time we had the guest talk by David Gunkel. Did you like the guest talk? Yeah? Okay. So now it's a Heidegger and McLuhan, so we go through now different approaches, right? So David's talk was more very specific talk, in a way a research talk, but now we continue the journey through different approaches in philosophy of technology. So this gives you a little bit an idea of what we're going to do before Christmas. Okay. Maybe it's also good before I start the lecture to already say something about how this course is going to be evaluated. So on the one hand, so it's an exam. There are two kind of questions. First question is a knowledge question. So I will ask about one particular theory or approach that has been introduced in the lectures. So you use what you know from the lectures for that, and you use the literature that is offered. Then the second part, which I find the most important part, is a small essay within the exam, where you take a theory of your choice and you apply that to technologies. I'll give a short list of possible technologies you can apply it to. And the idea is that you try to focus on not talk about the technology in general or about the theory in general, but that you try to focus on one problematic issue that you discuss. It can be that you try to understand the issue. It can be that you do a more normative thing, that you do a kind of ethics of the technology. So that is up to you. But the idea is, of course, to use the background of the course and then think yourself about it. That you argue yourself, analyze yourself this technology and the issue with it. Okay, that's the exam. So total time 90 minutes. Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Is it written, the first part?
Yes, it's a written exam.
And how long is it? Should it be approximately?
Yeah, so the total time is 90 minutes, and you have, I think for the knowledge question, it's one page.
Half a page,
and then the bigger one, you get much more space for it. It's at least two
three,
pages.
Three or four. Or something.
Yeah. So about three. So half a page for the knowledge question, three for the essay, roughly. It's not about one line more or less. It's more that I can see that you've done the thinking. Okay, more questions about the exam before we go on? Okay, then let's start for today. For today, you get two thinkers, McLuhan and Heidegger. Now, as usual, there's a lot more to say about these thinkers and their work. But here I really focus on, okay, first of all, what can they contribute to thinking about technology and new media? And second, what is their specific approach? Because for me, it's not only about introducing the theories by themselves, but it's also about showing that within philosophy of technology, there are all these different ways to approach things, and these ways are connected to general philosophy. So philosophy of technology I see as a proper field, and proper also in the sense not only that it can be applied to certain problems in the real world, but also that it's related to more generally to all kind of philosophical subfields, including epistemology, ethics, and so on. So that's the idea again. So in McLuhan, it's going to be his media theory, and then some thinking about responsibility based on a paper I wrote. And then in Heidegger, it's reading his text on the problem concerning technology. Let's start with McLuhan. In particular, Extensions of Man and the Medium is a message as kind of two main ideas. So his idea is that technology and media are extensions of the human. So it, you can see it as a response to the question, what is technology? It's a very basic question in thinking about technology, of course. And his idea is it's an extension. You've already seen extension, this idea, in Michael Funk's lecture, where he referred to Kapp's idea that, that technology is a kind of external organ. And here you also find this extension idea in McLuhan. Now, what's interesting in McLuhan is not only the idea that technology or media are an extension, but also that by being that extension, that it's not only a material extension, but our whole psychic and social world is also changed. So it's not just an instrument, technology. The medium is not just something that's in between there, but it actually changes the subject. And that's in particular McLuhan's view, which is then combined with a kind of view of history, where you have different ages. Each age depends on technology. That you can also see that in Marx already. And he contrasts a mechanical age, where you have technology as extensions of bodies. So let's say more like you have the hammer as an extension of the arm and the hand. So this example we've already seen or is also in the history. But here, the electric age, it's an extension for him of the central nervous system. So he sees computers, and if he would live now, internet, as an extension of the human nervous system. So it has more to do with thinking, with brains, with not just merely physical things. And so it's only when you see this kind of background, then you can more understand why he focuses on certain themes. One is that he discusses the technology of literacy. So for him, language is a technology, and then, of course, writing is also a technology. And so he discusses that development in the history of humankind. And you've seen in, I think it was in the lecture of Gunkel, I also refer to Plato, that already back then in ancient times there was this discussion like, yeah, what does this new technology of writing do to us? What kind of, how does it change our thinking? Does it take away the need for memory, for example? And so here, this is also in McLuhan. There's detachment, and that's positive because the technology helps you to memorize, for example. But it also means non-involvement. So these are different effects. So it's very ambiguous technology. The same happens if we look at technology in the context of globalization, where the technology as an extension allows the world to be totally interconnected. You get one world, one globe. McLuhan's way of saying that is to say that the globe becomes a village, a global village. That's a very known term from him. And yeah, this creates more awareness of what's going on in the rest of the world. It creates connections between people. But again, one can then ask also, yeah, what does this mean for social relations? Do they become also more detached, for example? And more involvement, what does this mean for responsibility? So these kind of questions are, I think, also very important for today. So what McLuhan says is that because our central nervous system is technologically extended, we participate in depth in the consequences of every action. It's no longer possible, he says, to adopt the aloof and dissociate role of the literate Westerner. So if we're all connected and we also know everything that's going on, basically it's much more difficult to say like, well, I'm not interested in what happens in another part of the world, because you hear it everywhere. You see what's happening. Think today about all kind of crises, wars, and so on. You get it all in your home. In McLuhan's time, it was a television, and now it's the internet and all kind of devices that use the internet. So I think this is a very interesting question. What does this mean then for how we perceive the world, given that we know so much now, and what are the moral consequences of that? According to McLuhan, this can lead to anxiety that we know all this, but also compels to commitment and participation. Because you can't pull out, basically. You can't go out of this. You have to be in it once you're connected. And so that means for him that you have to be committed. So he uses this as an example of how this new media have personal and social effects. So this means that a medium and a technology, one could say by extension, is not defined by its function. It's not only just doing what it's supposed to do, what we designed it for, but it also has these social and psychological effects, and we'll see moral effects as well. And his way of saying that is that the medium is the message, and you probably know this term. It means that the content of a medium is also always another medium. First of all, the medium itself shapes the message, and second of all, that this medium is itself related to other media. For example, a television. In a television, you have images. You maybe also have writing. For sure, on the internet, you have all kind of different media also, and these media are related to older media. In a more recent theory, that's called remediation. That all new media also bring old media again, but of course through a different medium. This might happen again in the future. So now you could say that all kind of internet connected devices, that they remediate writing and text, they remediate film, YouTube for example, and moving images, they remediate all kind of things that have existed. The phone also, mm-hmm. I think about Skype. And so if there would be another medium in the future, then it's very likely that this medium is going to kind of suck up the old medium, internet. So, but we don't know yet what that medium, how it's going to look like. That's again a main point for philosophy of technology, because it means that the what McLuhan calls the message, the explicit function of an artifact is not all there is. It's not all there is. We also have to look at what the medium itself does, the technology itself. For example, the light bulb, you could say like, yeah, the light bulb, it gives light. That's the function. It's not only that you couldn't do other activities But because of the light, if you think about it, it has transformed our whole society, because suddenly your activities are independent of the sunlight, which means you can work in the evening, in the night. I know someone who works in the night and sleeps in the day. This is impossible if you don't have electric light. So it decouples the normal biorhythm from the sun and so on. So it means that the whole way our society is organized can be different than in the past. So it's the function is not just light. And for McLuhan, electricity is also important, because he says it's pure information. And in his time, the internet did not exist yet, but he saw electricity as something that's about information. And so later, now with the internet, we can say now we have all kind of theories about information and technology. There's even the term information technologies. And that's with digital technology, not with electric technology. So he's thinking here about, okay, what could this new technology do to our societies and to our whole world? Maybe we see it now more in terms of information. For him, electricity is something that kind of has no content. He means that just the medium again has all kind of effects, pervasive effects. So it's also something we can very well understand today. So one of his famous quotes, again, it is a bit like the message, the medium is the message, is that the content of a medium is like a juicy piece of meat carried by the burglar to distract the watchdog of the mind. So he means that if we think about technology, our mind is focused, and also if we use technology, is focused on the function, but we don't notice the effects. So his project is to bring these effects, to reveal these effects, which are normally not seen. Here are also some examples of what I called, using more recent theory, remediation. Namely, the content of a movie is a novel or a play or an opera. So here it says whatever the program, it's interesting to look at what kind of medium is this. Well, a movie already has this old media in itself, and so he's analyzing the effects of the medium. Also, writing, you can say you want to communicate something, or you want to say something, but in the meantime, you're using print, for example, a printed book, you're using speech, and so again, the point is that this medium is important, and not only the content of what you're saying. Also, his view is that to know what's going on, to know how technology changes society, it's not enough to just think about this academically or with concepts, or to think about it at the level of opinions, let's say in newspaper and so on. For McLuhan, artists have an important role here, because for McLuhan, artists sense more than other people what is happening, how our sense perception, our perception of the world changes through new media and technologies. And sometimes maybe we don't get this immediately, but his view is really that through art we can also make this visible. So he's thinking about contemporary art there. So media as extensions that reshape the message, that are themselves the message. And then very interesting is that in McLuhan, there's already, even if he didn't know the internet yet at all, right, it's decades before the internet, he says already that with electric technology, the world has become a computer and electronic brain. So he already saw that, that we become more interconnected, and this we could say that digital technology has even enhanced this, has magnified this effect. And his way of saying that is again to think in terms of extension. So our central nervous system has been extended in a global embrace, abolishing both space and time as far as our planet is concerned. So the globalization, you could say, is as a process where we are more aware of what's going on in the rest of the world, is something that's made possible by this new technology. In his time, electric technology, where television images would circle the planet. Now we have with internet, we have also even more that there's information about everything everywhere all the time. It's a good idea also open, unless you can't hear me anymore, but it's nice to have some air. Just say when it's too cold, okay. So, if this is true, if there is this global embrace, so to speak, what are the moral consequences of this? And this is something that that I ask in the paper. What about responsibilities that are also globalized? McLuhan says that this increased awareness of responsibility that leads to anxiety. Think about today, we get all this information about these wars, about Trump and other disasters. And we have to try to cope with that. And according to McLuhan, we become anxious because we feel that we have to do something, right? If once you have this knowledge, it becomes a kind of burden. But at the same time, I would say it's quite difficult, especially as an individual being removed from all the places physically, to do something or to have a feeling that you're doing something. So I think this raises an interesting question, whatever McLuhan's particular view. How does technology change its knowledge, and what implications does this knowledge have for moral responsibility? McLuhan says the media work us over completely. They're so pervasive in their personal, political, economic, aesthetic, psychological, moral, ethical, and social consequences that they leave no part of us untouched, unaffected, unaltered. So perception, but also affect, we feel something. And what do we do with it? So very interesting question. So what I then ask based on this is that I see three questions in there. Do we want to know? Do we want to know everything that's presented to us in the media? What can we know? And then what can we do? So I kind of analyzed, broke down this idea and this argument. So I think I best discuss this in pieces. Let me see. So, do we want to know? Is really the question, because if it's true that we get more anxious because of the new technologies giving us all that knowledge, then what you see now already is that some people then say, like, well, then I don't watch anymore. Like, people wouldn't watch television anymore or wouldn't watch television news anymore. Then there's also a tendency, which is very understandable, to say, okay, I'm kind of consuming less information then. What can we know is a question also. It's true that we know more and more about what's going on somewhere else in the world, but what do we really know? What kind of knowledge do we have? So I think that's also a question that needs to be asked. Maybe we get our knowledge, for example, via the press, via television, via media and the internet, but do we really know everything what's going on? So that should also be asked. What is the quality of that knowledge? What is the range of that knowledge? Maybe we see just a very small part of what's going on. Maybe our view is distorted. So what exactly does the medium do to our perception? But also what, in terms of content, what is then the effect? Could it be that through social media today, for example, that we only see a certain kind of information, so some information that, because of the medium, gets visible? For example, things that are very very spectacular, already in the time of television, they would easily get into our media. And the same with social media. But does everything, what exactly gets in there and therefore gets through us? And then what can we do? I already said, like, maybe we can't do so much, or we have a feeling that we cannot do so much. So could there be mechanisms to enhance our possibilities for action, and avoid that we become totally apathetic, that we say, like, well, I don't care anymore. So these, I think these are very important questions also for today. So one can think about for the discussion now, because I propose that we discuss before I go to Heidegger. So let's see, first take the idea of technology as extension. What do you think of this idea, and can you relate this to your own life? Do you have the feeling that technology is an extension of yourself somehow? Yeah. By typing, for example, that is faster than writing, or the,
for example, finding an address.
Yeah.
Would take a person without a device or without internet.
Yeah. Search.
A lot of time. Yeah. Using speed of knowledge.
Yeah. Okay. So it saves the service faster. Of course, it also means, as an unintended effect, means that. So its main function was to do things faster for us, to help us. But because of that, it also means that I get tons of emails, that the working life, for example, gets faster and faster.
Yeah.
So that, I think that's a very interesting paradoxical effect, that we want it to be faster, so we have these computers and then smartphones and so on. And it is true, it's fast and it's easy, but it also means that more can be done. More is expected. There's more communication, more going on. So that could be a kind of like doing it, not doing it. Yeah.
I think also if you remember Facebook, it's like
a
whole different extension for people who are using it. It's just made of this media entity
on the person. So that entity on Facebook, the person on Facebook, in a way, becomes an extension of themselves.
Basically, it's a person can be a person, which is an extension of themselves. It's just an example.
Yeah. Yes, and there you can also ask the question about the medium, because if I build a kind of person on Facebook, right? It's not that this person is totally unrelated to life, and the question then is if what you're doing there, how it influences your other life, if you want, right? Because I think in terms of perception, one could argue that the medium changes the way we experience things. For example, take a talk by David, for example, right? So something is happening. There's an event, and I'm following this event. I'm listening to this talk. Then in my mind, I'm going to post this on Facebook. Because I post things on Facebook from work, not privately. And so, I'm thinking already about that when I'm listening to this talk. And so, you could say that then the what happens online consequence for what I do offline, for how I see things also. And maybe also a bit more informal, for example. And it's not only like listening to a talk, but for example, the giving a talk. If you're giving a public talk, then if you know already that something is recorded, for example, you might do it differently, or you might, more and more talk the language of Facebook or the language of Twitter and so on. I mean, these are suggestions, right? Whether it is like that, one can discuss. But I think it's good to ask the question, like, what exactly is the effect, right, that this kind of use of technologies has? And the very term extension also really expresses that it's I think the very connection between the technology and us, that it's not something that stands apart from us, that has become such a part of our lives, so like being dependent and addicted to a smartphone, for example, is maybe also a good example. Any other experiences you have yourself about use of new technologies, new media, where you say like, well, this is actually there, I experience technology as an extension, as something that really belongs to me or something, rather than just being this neutral tool that has nothing to do with it. Yes? Yeah. If I can experience in real time other events that are not taking place here, I can. It also means that in general with digital technology, but especially with that, I can be in a way present in two places at the same time, for example. I can do two things at the same time. So very different kind of a perceptual idea. And some people then argue, well, we can't actually multitask, so what we do is we always switch back and forth. So imagine that you're listening and at the same time you want to send a message on your phone. That's kind of so the question is that possible? But in any case, it shows that there are new kind of problems. Like what kind of experience is that? It's like being here and being there. What is this being there? Is it not really being there? Okay, but still, if you have real time information, if there's all the sensory input, you can't say that it's totally irrelevant or something to your current experience. So what kind of experience is that? So these are questions I think one can also explore by using McLuhan. Also the changes to the world, of course, in a lifetime they're not always that big changes. So for example, in my lifetime there was a change from this McLuhanian world to the world of the internet. But do you have a feeling that, I mean, do you have the idea that new technologies change the world? that is something that really changes things. That it's not just a tool, but it shapes the whole world also as we see it. We have the feeling that we live in a global village, as McLuhan calls it, or the feeling we mainly live in Vienna, in Austria. What's your thoughts on this? Yeah.
I'm rather skeptical on the notion of global village.
Yeah.
Because as you said, the information we get about the other countries, mm-hmm. what's happening in some distant places in Australia, what kind of information is that? It isn't mediated information, mm-hmm. But the only truth knowledge can be obtained only from inside, from the living interaction. Mm-hmm. So, and it's
like
we're
talking
still living
to people there. Yeah,
yeah, talking, doing mm-hmm. things. We're still living in our own worlds, mm-hmm. and just like seeing the other places, like movies, mm-hmm. which only cause anxiety, as you said, but
yeah.
nothing more.
So do you think an also real engagement with these problems would require to really be there, to really go there, for example?
Well, it's not that easy, of course. Just mm-hmm. Many factors should be accounted for. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that going into the place physically mm-hmm. changes anything, but it's something in between. We
yeah.
really need to overcome the stage of anxiety mm. and to reflect on what is the best way to handle this or that information.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Good point. Okay. What about progress? So do you think it's, I mean, someone already said like, yeah, it's good that we now can do things faster. Do you think that technology brings progress? Is it better? Are we now better off than before because of the technology?
Can you explain please what you mean by progress?
Mm-hmm. A good question. So what could it mean? It could mean that we're more happy, for example, or it could mean that there's more wealth. Could be all kind of definitions of progress. Good point. So what would you be your answer?
If that's progress, then
yeah.
we can say maybe technology helps the redistribution of wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah, about the happiness though, I'm not quite certain because the overload of information is really paralyzing. This mentioned liver anxiety
yeah.
is something that becomes a new problem.
Yeah. But you think that because of the new technology, can you say a little bit more about that? There's more distribution of wealth, so a positive effect, I mean, that there's more distribution, yeah?
If you see progress as something to do with wealth,
yeah.
then technology makes wealth distribution easier through faster roads, faster communication between companies and so on,
okay.
new payment methods.
So it kind of it helps the economy.
It
yeah.
helps the economy.
Yeah. Yeah. Other thoughts on this? Yes.
Say in general, progress and technology are interconnected, but to me, it really depends who can in some way participate in that technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of technology out there, but that technology is only accessible for a very few amount of people.
Yeah.
Then I would say it's not progress
yeah.
like that. So there are some other dependencies also.
Yeah, so that brings me to another question about does technology even closer, does it divide us, does it bring more inequality or less? So there's a discussion about a so-called digital divide, that not everyone has access to new digital technologies, And if they have access, then they don't always use it to empower themselves. Now, in general, this is going better than before, so more and more people have access. But there's still the question, what do you do with it? You can use a phone for all kind of things. Do you really use a smartphone, for example, so that you can have a better job or a different job or to help the job you already have? So the discussions about development countries, for example, like different kinds of people in a rural area, for example, more and more people have mobile phones, but then how are they used? Can they be used to for development, for improving the lives of people, or are they just used for personal communication? But maybe the personal communication helps the local economy and so on. So there are debates about this. Then the role of artists. Do you agree with McLuhan that artists can show us what technologies unintendedly do to our perception, to our world? Do you agree that artists can have this function, or do you think other people can do that too? Yeah.
I think that the conceptual of technology is fixed on a certain output.
Yeah.
The technology was designed for, and it is the capacity of the artist that is it's possible to approach the technology in a new way, not only in arts, but it may also show unintended purposes that affect us,
yeah,
may not know about. And so it is possible to improve the technology, or as well make it obsolete again.
Yeah. Have a new technology in its place, for example.
Yes.
Other remarks on art?
Honestly speaking, I do not quite understand the connection between arts and artists and technology.
Yeah.
In what way can artists change our views of technology? Could you probably elaborate more on this?
Yeah. So change our views, I don't know, but in any case make us aware of the effects of the technology. So the ideas, I guess the argument starts from the presumption that artists can have a different kind of perception than other people. But I would say not only artists, but there is a possibility to perceive in a different way, and because of that, that they can maybe earlier than other people or different from other people perceive what's going on in terms of changes of perception. And McLuhan's point is that while technology changes perception, and so to see what these changes are about, we need artists as a kind of antenna to see this.
Is there any example, a particular painting, or just don't get what's meant?
I think, for example, if you look at the Angewandte Kunst, there are a lot of people concerned with media, media arts, I don't know how to phrase it in English, but probably also in McLuhan's time this was an art form, maybe had this art form in mind when you're talking about this. For example, if you use TV for something different as it is normally used, but an artist would be just someone whose work is concerned with that. That's how an artist is defined here. So if you, I don't know, imagine 100 TV screens and staple up, yes, and they all show one picture of something completely different than what you would normally get out of the TV. So they try to make a new approach to certain media. Maybe that's what McLuhan had in mind, more than some painting, right? That is not.
Maybe that also draws attention to the medium itself, because artists, they. I was just in the Einhard Zwanziger house, and there was this exhibition about all kind of materials and objects that artists use. And so artists tend to of course, there's also a message, but at the same time, they spend a lot of time on the medium, the painting or the object or the television or the computer or whatever. Because for them, that's important, what kind of medium do I use? And by having these objects, in this case there, as a viewer, you start thinking about the object, whereas normally you would just use it. But because it's put in this different context, because it's used in art, so this could be one way of interpreting what it means. Other examples or thoughts on this? Yeah.
I'm not so sure whether this role is just confined to the arts. We can see that artists are using technology in different contexts, and add reading perspectives. But on the other side, I think there are also many cases where people started to create or get the idea of a new practical end, and then they're just searching for technology to reach this end, and maybe the technology was not intended to reach this end. Playing with groups, I don't know, and then they realize, well, you can not only do this with a computer, but you can also do that.
Sure.
And this is also a way for me to put this technology into a new context. So I would say it's not only confined to the arts, but also technology in different ways.
Yes, and in more creative ways, one could say, right? But it's not only confined to art. Yeah, I agree with you. And also nowadays, borders between artists and researchers, for example, they also blur. And so artists would do a bit of research, and there would be people in computer science that also do something else with a computer than they normally in creative ways program different things. So I think McLuhan really goes to art as such, but I think I agree with you that it's much wider. One could say all kind of creative uses and explorations can also contribute to this. Okay, we have to go to Heidegger now. So there's a lot to say about Heidegger's work. Here I will focus on the question concerning technology. Of course, for me, it's absolutely fine if it's a German philosopher that you, if you want to read this in German, also absolutely fine. The main point here is to understand Heidegger's view of technology, and also his approach. Like, okay, we've now seen McLuhan. Like, how did Heidegger? What kind of theoretical background goes into the interpretation also of technology. So for me, important in terms of views of technology and method is that for Heidegger, technology is not this kind of object alone or this instrument, but it's a way of revealing. It's a way of seeing the world of knowledge. And that's why I also put McLuhan and Heidegger in the same lecture. So let me go through the essay to bring this out, what this means. So Heidegger starts with asking the question, what is technology? And he says the essence of technology is not technological. So what does this mean? Well, he starts with the instrumental definition of technology. Technology is a means to an end. It's something we use, a tool to reach a human end. And that's also an anthropological definition because technology is seen as a human activity. So technology is here instrumental and it's human. And Heidegger then argues that technology is also more. So on the one hand he says, of course it's correct. Technology is an instrument. And so modern technology, because he's mainly concerned with modern technology, is also an instrument. But he says modern technology is something else than older handwork technology. So why is that? He gives the example of turbans. This is
a whole setup to generate electricity. It says, yeah, of course, this is means to end, right? So it's a mean to generate electricity. But then by comparing with other technologies, he reads much more into that. He says that there's much more meaning to it in a way. So he says that the problem is if you focus on the instrumental definition, then you're fixated on that. But that doesn't mean that you really understand what technology is about. So we have to go further into an analysis. Then he goes into Aristotle's four causes and develops the argument, yeah, to understand what is an instrument, we have to understand causes. And I will leave the story about the causes, but I will jump to what I think is most important, that is his definition of a bringing forth. And here it's all about ways of revealing. So he says the crafts have a certain way of revealing. And he thinks then about ancient times, like the Greek times or medieval times. So you bring forth, you make something, but it's different than nature. In nature, he says, things develop by themselves. So something is brought forth, but it's not of human making. Whereas in crafts, we make something. We are in there. We do the bringing forth. But at the same time, it's not a bringing forth in the sense of an action only. It's also a different way of seeing the world, of looking, and so the world is revealed in a different way by the technology, and this leads him to analyze modern technology. So if it's true that technology is not a mere means but a way of revealing, a way the truth reveals itself, then what does this mean for modern technology? He says if you look at all technology, it works with nature, but it doesn't really change nature, and it doesn't really change our thinking about nature. For example, he gives he thinks about a windmill or a water mill, and there is, according to Heidegger, the water flows through it, or the wind goes through it, but we don't really change nature. We let nature go its own course. Whereas he says that modern technology, there is a challenging fort, herausfordernd, because we kind of force nature to give its energy to us. It's no longer a river like the Rhine in a poem by Hölderlin. It becomes an object, it becomes ordered, just as a tour group gets ordered by the vacation industry. Or just as animals are ordered by the kind of the factories, it's a different way of acting, but also a different way of thinking, because you think for Heidegger about modern technology in a way that sees it as an object, as what he calls a standing reserve. Bestand, something that's there to use for humans, rather than leaving it on its own. So he then describes all this unlocking, transforming, storing, distributing that's happening in and with modern technology, and so this is a kind of revealing of nature and of the world that's particularly modern, and that he contrasts to these old ways of doing things. So here's a quote about standing reserve. Everything is ordered to stand by, to be immediately at hand, indeed to stand here just so that it might maybe on a call for further ordering. I guess the metaphor he has here is that of a servant who stands by, right? He's there to be ordered. So it's something that's stock, that's bestand to use, and this is a different way of revealing. And then the question is like, yeah, is that still a human doing? Because the idea in Heidegger here is that once we have this modern technology, everything becomes an enframing, everything becomes a bestand, and so the technology changes the world in such a way that the technology kind of takes over, you could say, in a sense that it totally shapes our thinking and shapes our world. So the question is how much control we still have. And many people read a lot of fatalism here in Heidegger. It's a kind of fate, geschick, that the modern technology came to us and gave this kind of revealing, and we can't do anything about that. And Heidegger says also that man doesn't have control over this concealment and unconcealment. We can respond to it. Heidegger think also about this view of language. We can respond to language, but it's not. We are not totally in control. We live in language. Here also, modern technology is not a merely human doing, and so we are living in this age of modern technology. So it sets upon man. It's something that holds sway. It's all kind of language he uses to express this, that the technology is not totally under our control. And I think without going into fatalism, one can interpret that this as saying that, yeah, technology is not totally in our control, so one can have a less radical view on this. But I think that's the insight here is that, like in McLuhan, that you know, we have this message, but the medium then does so much more than we intended, and here there's the same kind of message, like watch out that you're not bewitched by this instrumental understanding of technology, because we have this the technology does more. It's a way of thinking, a way of revealing things for us. It's much more than an instrument. So for Heidegger, he uses the language of essence. It means that the essence of modern technology is this enframing. And this means that we have this particular relation to the world and to ourselves. Because one can ask, if you have this kind of thinking, don't we also start think about ourselves and about others as a kind of bestand? Maybe it means that... taking up the example of social media again, that we start thinking about ourselves as data, as information, which then can be posted. As maybe we start thinking about ourselves as something to be posted. And this is not what Heidegger says, of course, but this is what I try to apply this to today. So there is a danger for him, and what's danger is not the technology as such, but what he calls this essence of technology, this particular way of revealing. For Heidegger, though, it means that we can also become aware of this, so there's a saving power in this danger. So on the one hand, there's an ordering that blocks every view on this revealing, so we become not aware of it, but maybe it comes to pass, and we can become aware of it. So for him, not having everything in control is not such a big problem. It is a problem, but it's if you don't have something in control, maybe it means that this fate is passing at some point. So he says, like, well, maybe we will be saved. And of course, he believes in philosophy here, and we can reflect upon technology. But also, like McLuhan, McLuhan is later than Heidegger, of course, so one could say McLuhan like Heidegger, thinks that art is important. Art which is a, one could say, a different kind of questioning, and which means that we have a different way of thinking. So again, the question is, what is the role of art? But also, if you think about Heidegger here for the discussion, can you see this idea of technology being a different way of revealing, a different mode of thinking and knowledge, perhaps, rather than a mere instrument? Can you find examples about that? Can you make sense of this today also? I already gave some examples, but...
I think I mentioned the windmill as opposed to the modern power plant.
Yep.
Yes. So, but couldn't you argue that the only real difference is the scale?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think I recall that he also mentions a farmer who works his land,
yep,
and compares that to some coal mine, which, yep, and he makes the difference that the coal mine really takes apart nature and really,
mm-hmm,
unravels,
yeah,
the ground and such. But you could also argue that this, of course, I mean, if you see that a rainforest is being destroyed and so on,
mm-hmm,
this is not only a scale problem, but an actual problem. But
mm-hmm,
I mean, what I'm saying is maybe also that the farmer saw wind as a not tool, are you saying,
mm-hmm,
as something that his windmill,
yeah,
goes.
Yeah, so maybe there's also a rouse for it.
Yes,
yeah,
that's not the real,
yeah,
difference here.
Yeah, I personally agree with you. So the, I mean, I think Heidegger really exaggerates this difference between the old technology and the modern technology. So at least one could say that there's a gradual difference here, that a difference of scale, a difference of pervasiveness, perhaps. But agriculture, to take that example, because probably he doesn't think that's a problem. But agriculture has had an enormous impact on our landscapes. It has completely transformed the world, right? There used to be a lot more forest before the agricultural revolutions. So there has been deforestation everywhere because of that. If you also now go in a countryside, which we now romanticize, it is a human scarred landscape or something. Or humans have completely transformed this. So I agree with you that this kind of view is problematic in Heidegger. He wants to go back to a particular time, but why taking that time as the standard or as the original? Also, that is part of a whole evolution of human culture. And we've always used technology to transform our world. Nevertheless, the question is then, okay, what does, in his case, modern technology, he's thinking about more industrial, mechanical kind of technology, in electricity also, like McLuhan. But what about today, right? Is the technology we have today, is it just a gradual difference? Or is there really something specific in the way it changes our thinking in the way we treat nature? So, for example, I would say that we also, by having information technology, we also turn nature into information as a kind of bestand that should be ready for us. But the question is that so much different than from the earlier technologies?
In regards to that, of course, which will be interesting is how something like Google Glass will change.
Yeah, okay.
The way we perceive,
yeah,
things, where you have all the information,
yeah,
on your display.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's now already the case that, that because of our smartphones, which become a kind of extension, one could say, that it's already much closer to us. So what if we did have it even in our, literally in our field of perception? What could change? Yeah. A good point. So, in any case, even if one has a kind of gradual view, one could say, like, yeah, well, that means that technology has maybe much, much higher influence on our perception, on the way we think about things. when it's that close, when we use it all the time, literally all the time, rather than every so many minutes or every hour taking and looking at your phone that you have it all the time. So that's definitely, I mean, I think we can all agree that that's a different situation than farming, for example. Nevertheless, yeah, it's good to compare and see how this way of thinking maybe is already older. So maybe also what Heidegger and others criticize as modern thinking is also older. And that's also why in my book about financial technologies that I went back to the ancient times where there were also already there was accounting in an agricultural context. And there were also power differences and so on. So I don't think one should always blame modernity only. So it has a long, much longer history. This kind of way of thinking that Heidegger describes and this kind of revealing of the world as something that we can use of others also as instruments for our purposes. Other remarks on this? Is today's technology modern technology? You can also think about that. Could today's technology be shaped in a way and used in a way that doesn't have this effect so much? Or can it be ambiguous maybe? Can we maybe have sites that are different? I find in McLuhan that there is more the ambiguity, because in McLuhan there's also the positive side of the interconnecting people, making the world smaller, for example. So he sees also that side. Whereas in Heidegger it's really, I would say the emphasis is on the dark side of technology. Note, however, that I will say that next time in post-phenomenology, for them, this has been a reason to reject Heidegger, because they say, Heidegger is so pessimistic about technology. But I think what should be safe from Heidegger, if anything, is this view that our technologies are connected to ways of thinking, ways of revealing that is interesting by itself. Yes?
Couldn't you argue that today's modern technology goes one step beyond just to try and use and probably abuse the Bestand of nature and actually try sometimes to preserve it?
Yep.
Which was not that prominent in Heidegger's time.
Yeah. Sure, so one could argue we can use the technology to preserve nature. Now, then my question would be, how do we preserve it? Because, for example, thinking in terms of ecosystems, thinking about the management of a nature reserve, for example. So on the one hand, of course, this is good, right? Because it preserves species, for example. On the other hand, there is also the very modern thinking that Heidegger criticizes. Because in order to preserve, you're going to record, store, process, you're going to manage, you're going to include nature in a kind of economic system when you talk about eco-services, for example. So I'm also critical of this approach, right? So yes, we should try to use technology to do good things for nature and so on. But then the question is, how do we do that, and can we do it in a way that avoids this kind of thinking? Can we treat nature in ways that don't see it as a Bestand? Don't see it as information that needs to be processed. So, and that's an open question for me. I don't have the answer there, but I think it's good to try to
think about this thing and see what's going on, and perhaps interpret what's going on in different ways. Show that, like, maybe on the one hand there is the modern thinking, but on the other hand, hey, these people or these artists or these whatever, try to do things in a different way. And what is different then? And does it really get us out of this kind of thing?
Seems to me that all this talk about preserving nature and so on presumes that a human being in some ways detached from nature.
Yeah. And that there is such a thing as nature separate from humanity. I do as well want to criticize this kind of thinking by saying that we have a need for ecological kind of thinking, and we also have other kinds of post-humanist kind of thinking where human is not set apart from. And in Heidegger, it's very much still the case that he thinks in this anthropocentric tradition, because we're talking here about the discussion of anthropocentrism versus other approaches. Heidegger is very much part of this anthropocentric tradition. So you're right in the sense. Yeah,
I think it's also apparent that Heidegger is the similarity between his criticism of modern technology,
yeah,
and his older blood and soil philosophy,
mm-hmm,
with which he runs his anti-Semitic rants,
yeah,
about using your roots.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically the same chain of arguments he uses for both.
There's a conceptual link between his romanticism about these old times when everything was still fine and his political views. Yes, yeah. So that's also why I personally stress the more the what I see as the core of his ideas, like this non-instrumental understanding of technology, as something that needs to be safe from Heidegger. But the other arguments are problematic. That being said, I also think that we can't get rid so easily of certain nostalgias and romanticism and so on. Because in the global village, so to speak, to take up McLuhan's term again, because of the globalization, people also feel alienated. And so they look for all kinds of ways to connect to whatever they define as something.
What I was just saying is that I think this was written in 1950 or something,
yeah,
and he could not, because he had this ban, he could not write about anti-Semitic things because,
yeah,
he was banned. And that I think it is in part his way of doing it, still doing it.
Yeah. So I agree. I mean, that there's this, as far as I know, he never really said that he was wrong and this kind of thing. So that is very problematic in Heidegger. Of course, to have a full discussion of this would require more time, and one would also have to read in detail these new texts that are there now and connect to this whole discussion about it. So I'm not a specialist in this. I'm aware of this. But my point is here not so much. I mean, and that's also in my research. It's good that there are scholars who really try to see what did Heidegger want to say, what kind of person was Heidegger, what kind of views did Heidegger have. I try to see what is valuable in the view of a philosopher, and then use it to connect to other philosophers and so on, and to do something, to make arguments about technology in this case. So I'm less interested in questions like, you know, what did Heidegger really think politically and so on, than for now for its technology. But there are links, for sure. I think Heidegger's view of technology, just to limit it to that, yes, you can see you can see this a little bit in the text also. So yeah, it's good that you mentioned it. Okay, other remarks? Yeah. There's a problem if you really, if you would only stick to the arguments, that's right. So there's a political side of this. I don't want to depoliticize, but I would like to have a different politics. I would like to have a politics that asks questions about, okay, what kind of effects on our world and perception and our doings do we want to have? So. I'm selective in Heidegger, but then I don't do that to depoliticize, but to ask new kinds of political questions. So I think there is definitely a political question about technology, and so that to ask that question, one first has to understand what technology is doing, and so one could take this view of like, okay, technology has this not instrumental meanings and effects, and then ask the political question, okay, then where should we go then? Because as a collective, we have this problem with technology. And so then, and within that discussion, one could then bring in the Heidegger's views if you want, but definitely, I mean, I agree with what you should be very not to depoliticize philosophy, also not philosophy. But I'm aware, of, I mean, I have been a different course about the politics of technology, so I'm very well aware of this. But yeah, here I kind of cut this out from Heidegger and then link it to other things where my main goal here is to show the approach and especially that part of the approach. But it's true that, and for example, I mean, one problem with some type of analytic philosophy is that it goes too far in direction, that it's only about arguments that are totally decontextualized. So it can be a definitely different. Other questions, remarks? Okay, thank you for your questions. And next time we're going to talk about post-phenomenology. And then the phenomenology is then here Heidegger, and then post is a response to this. Okay, see you next time.